always a risk to be the last speaker because everybody is already so tired after the workshop. Anyhow, let's try. So I started already yesterday to mention what would be the contents of the second part. So most of my research activities are in microstructure modeling of advanced functional materials. And there, on the other hand, very similar effects occur as you observe in your networks. In particular, we are investigating particle networks in three dimensions, and as I understood from one of the talks yesterday, I think, three dimensions also start to play a role in the analysis of mobile networks, and I, as understood, it's very similar to, for example, to the situation which we observe in thin film analysis. So the extension of the Z axis is much smaller than in the XY axis, and I think that's similar in telecommunication network modeling. And another similarity is that we have at least bivariate scales. So we have the pattern of macro base stations, and they form tessellation, or typically a Voronoi tessellation. And in the cells, there is some inner life created by micro base stations or mobiles or other things. And so there are several similarities, and I would like to show you some of these similarities, and maybe to wake your interest, to try these modeling methods which we used in the context of microstructures to your data, to your problems. So. The methods we use here are partially different from what I saw during this week. On the other hand, there are also common things like tessellations and point processes. So the talk is organized in the following way. First, I would like to tell something about modeling of the inner life of tessellation cells, where we use a kind of Fourier series expansion called spherical harmonics. And then this representation of the inner life of individual cells will be stochastically modeled by Gaussian fields on a sphere. And the next step is to compose these things together to a network model. And also because we are mainly data-driven, so our modeling approach is data-driven, and which is, might be a slight difference to the situation in communication networks, because there is everything so secret. in material science, you have also confidentialities, but keeping a small piece of material in your hand might be not yet so dangerous if you lose it somewhere. Anyhow, so model validation is also an important step to compare data, so-called real data, which are measured somehow microscopically, and simulated data from your model. Okay, so let me explain what I mean. So we would like to consider random tessellations where the cells have some inner life, and this inner life can be created in various ways. So we saw in the talk of Gerhard this morning that his inner life were point patterns again. Yeah? But you can put segment systems or graphs, yeah, describing road systems in a serving zone or whatever. So this is maybe interesting, and more interesting in the case of wired network modeling. I will not go into details in this. On the other hand, you can also insert full dimensional, also if you are in the plane, two-dimensional random sets into your cells, and these random sets can describe coverage problems.
For example, if you do not fully cover the whole area of your cells, then something remains, and this uncovered cell area could be a bad area, for example. Or you might be interested on the length fraction of uncovered per unit area, for example, of the uncovered boundary length of your cells. And this might be also a mean to describe some bad situations. And then, in distinction to what Gerhard told us this morning, we are not so much working on the derivation of analytical formulas by mathematical arguing, but we also derive formulas, but they are simulation-based. So we provide extensive simulation studies and on the basis overnight, so to say, yeah? And then we create formulas which might also contain integrals, but they are less complex. So we try to fit parametric distributions, various kinds of parametric distributions, to our simulation output. And then, in this way, we get relatively simple analytical formulas, which are good approximations for what happens inside the cells or with some other types of network characteristics. And in this way, we can express the distributions of interesting network characteristics, so characteristics of second kind, which cannot directly be influenced in the normal case, in terms of in terms of parameters which you can influence. So the density of your base stations, for example, or some kind of things you put into your cells, you can decide by yourself how many microstations you put into your cells, but how they interact maybe between neighboring cells, this is much more complicated, and we derive formulas for this kind of second order characteristics by simulation for a wide spectrum of tessellation models, not only Voronoi, but Laguerre, and in this talk here I will focus on Laguerre tessellations, which are slightly more flexible than Voronoi. And then we can systematically modify the model parameters and get a whole family of parametric distributions for interesting network characteristics. Okay, what this has to do with material modeling. So in many kinds of materials, we observe networks of connected particles. In particular, for sintered materials. Take some powder, heat it up, and then these particles bake together. And they form, of course, completely connected particle systems, because particles cannot hang around in the air. So that is similar to communication networks. We don't want to have isolated cells, of course. And size and shape of particles play, of course, a significant role for, you would say, performance, and engineers call it functionality. In particular, with respect to transport issues. Transport is very similar in particulate materials, so charge carriers hop from particle to particle. This is like handover of mobiles from cell to cell. And often the particles, and this is also the case in your situations, the particles or the cells are irregularly shaped and cannot be described by hexagons or spheres in a realistic way. So here's an example. This is a 2D slice of an anode material in lithium ion batteries, and you see you have dispersity in size and shape of particles. Okay, so our principal modeling idea of these networks of particles is to start from
Laguerre tessellations, which describe the location and also the size, locations and sizes of cells or particles. And then we draw a random graph which describes the connectivity of the connectivity situation between neighboring cells and particles. And then we use Gaussian random fields to describe the inner life of our cells. And the last step is maybe less important. We need some smoothing to meet the measured structures a little bit better than just performing the first three steps. But this might be not important in this case here when we try to compare the method for possible usage in the modeling of communication networks. So here is an overview. We start from a Laguerre tessellation, then we insert a connectivity graph, and in the third step, we insert particles into the Laguerre cells, and the gray part of the image is the coverage area, and the white is the bed or the uncovered area. And then some corrections are necessary to get a reasonably good fit in our case. Okay, analogies exist. Laguerre cells can be understood as serving zones. Particles embedded in the Laguerre cells as sub-areas with good service quality. And the complementary set might be bed area. Okay, so what we did in Ulm, we used spherical harmonics to parametrically represent the covered subsets of radio cells, I would say. And then we used this parametric representation because usually when you look at microscopic data, they are typically given voxel-wise. And in three dimensions, this can be huge data sets, and not possible to use this detailed information for mathematical modeling. So a first step is a data preprocessing step where you abstract from some less important details of the data, and this is usually done by some kind of parametric representation. So we leave the grid and represent our data in an off-grid way. And then, after this data preprocessing step, we develop a stochastic model to also parametric stochastic model to simulate single particles. And finally, we put these virtual particles together to get a virtual network of connected particles, which is then compared to what we observe in data. So this we call model validation, and there are at least two kinds of model validation. The main thing is to do a structural model validation, so we compare image characteristics observed in experimental data and in simulated data. But besides, also physical model validation is possible. We can compare several transport characteristics or transport charge transport characteristics by numerical simulation on the basis of measured structures and numerical simulations based on simulated structures or mechanical properties or various other things. So validation is not only possible with respect to structure. And in your case, I think it's also possible to look at the time-dependent behavior of your system, and then not only the static structure plays a role. Here is just a visual inspection comparison of experimental data and simulated data, and I would say they are quite nicely fit quite nicely together. Okay, what we understand by spherical harmonics, so we need to assume something to be able to represent our coverage areas bias-filled harmonics. So the basic assumption is that these covered areas should be star-shaped. There should be a barycenter, and from that rays should go out, which are completely contained in the covered area, in the coverage area. So no holes are allowed. So this is a certain restriction. And in this talk, I didn't have the time to change the notation from 3D to 2D, but I understood that 3D is in a sense important also for you, but the philosophy is very similar. This is just some non-ideal notation. So beginning from now, I will discuss the 3D case. So a star-shaped set in R3 can be described by a radius function where we have two angles, and in the 2D case, we just delete this first component and have this angular function just defined on the 2D circle. Okay, and this radius function describes the distance of the boundary of this coverage area from the barycenter given in each given direction, and the most important observation is that this type of functions can be developed in a kind of a Fourier series. And this special kind of series expansion is called spherical harmonics expansion, because the basis functions are so-called spherical harmonics functions. And they look as it is shown here. So these spherical harmonics functions are just simple transforms of Legendre polynomials. There's nothing too difficult. And one can show that each square integrable function on the unit sphere, not only in dimension 3, but in any dimension, can be represented by such an expansion into spherical harmonics, infinite series in theory, and the coefficients are just the characteristics. So the coefficients are in the indices, double indexed coefficients, and if the second component is zero, then we have real valued coefficients, and all the other coefficients are complex numbers. Okay, in practice, we have to truncate this series, and we approximate our radius function by a finite expansion into spherical harmonics. this kind of representing voxel-based data by spherical harmonics has several advantages. So instead of storing a huge amount of voxel information, we just have to store a finite vector of coefficients, which is much easier. And besides, we can control the roughness of the surfaces of the boundary of our coverage area by choosing n, a smaller or larger number. And furthermore, having this representation, we can use this representation to come up with a stochastic model for these coverage areas, and the stochasticity here is just a stochastic model for the vector of coefficients, which can be computed from data by simple numerical integration. Like here, so we just look at the projections of the radius functions, of the radius, considered radius function on the particular basis functions. And this, like in Fourier series analysis, this gives the coefficients, and this kind of double integral can be easily solved numerically. So we have a way to suppose that we observe these radius functions. We have a way to compute the corresponding coefficients, and in this way we have a parametric representation of complex voxel data or pixel data.
Okay, here's an illustration. So suppose that this is our particle in 3D. If we choose n small, then it's we lose lots of information. If we choose n larger, this is for n equal to 10 and n equal to 20, we keep more and more details of the surface. And of course, this is done not only with a single particle, but with a huge number of particles, as I think in your case, it's also interesting to look at large networks. So you have thousands of cells, and this pre-processing of data works is a fast method. It can be organized in a fast way. So that's not the bottleneck from the computational point of view, and you transform your data into a nice system of smoother particles. Okay, stochastic modeling of single particles. So we use a parametric stochastic model to stochastically represent the pre-processed ensemble of particles, still without connectivity issues. And for that we use a Gaussian random field on the sphere in 1D, 2D, or any dimension, doesn't matter. And this random Gaussian field can be easily fitted to data, as you will see in a moment. So, because our supposition is that we have to do with bounded particles, so the realizations of our Gaussian field fulfill this requirement, which makes the series expansion into spherical harmonics possible. So each realization of this kind of Gaussian random field can be represented pathwise as a infinite series of spherical harmonics in the way as I showed you before. And again, we have to cut, of course, this infinite series for practical purposes. And then we just have a finite number of parameters which we have to model stochastically. And the approach of course, one always starts from simple things. We suppose that the random coefficients are independent and non-independent. Yeah, this is a simplification. And normal distribution, or everybody likes normal distribution. And it turns out that this is very leads to very good fits, yeah? Especially if you want to use Gaussian fields for modeling single particles, we have to suppose that the coefficients are normal distributed, and there are two kinds of parameters. So this only for one coefficient, the expectation is different from zero. This mu is closely related with the mean particle size, and then we have a series. Besides, we have a series of variances, and the series of these variances is connected with the roughness or with the shape. Is closely correlated with shape properties of the surface of our particles, and the sequence of these capital A's is called angular power spectrum of the Gaussian field. So these are the parameters of our single particle model, and we have to choose some numerical values. So if you want to do data-free analysis, you just choose them somehow. But if you start from experimental data, you have to fit these parameters to data. First, you have to decide about the n. This is a separate story. What kind of maximum likelihood estimation procedure you can compute an n truncation degree, which is somehow optimal. And given n, so in our case, we didn't choose n data dependent, but just selected the number n, and then you have this vector of parameters, which you have to you have this vector of normal distributed random variables, And this vector of basis functions, so your Gaussian random field, you can approximately represent by this product of two finite dimensional vectors, where the A vector is the random vector, and the Y vector is a deterministic vector. And in other words, the random vector of, by our assumptions, the random vector of coefficients is a has a multivariate Gaussian distribution, and the mean, the expectation vector is of this type, as I mentioned before. Just one component is different from zero, and because we suppose that the coefficients are independent, the covariance matrix is just a diagonal matrix. So this is the Gaussian field model, and in order to fit the model, we have to look at our data, and to, roughly speaking, we have to compute sample means and sample variances, roughly speaking, which is also fast. Also, modeling and fitting, data preprocessing and fitting this Gaussian field is not the bottleneck. This can be done very fast. So let me skip the details here. okay, maybe just one comment. In our case, the solid phase had 73% of volume fraction, which is, of course, not really satisfactory in your case. You would like to have more good area, so maybe 90% or 95%. But this is not a problem. Our model is quite flexible, so we can turn the model parameters such that we easily get 90 or 95% coverage. but here our intention was to fit experimental data, and from the manufacturer we know that that 73% is the volume fraction of the solid phase. So we selected the parameters in that way that we met this very basic geometric characteristic of the structure. Okay, next step. So this was single particle modeling, or modeling in, translating in the language of communication networks, modeling of the inner life of single radio cells. Okay, now we want to go to the system level, and we want to model networks of connected particles. And this is done, as I mentioned already before, in four steps. The first step is we choose, or we consider, a random Laguerre tessellation which models the locations and sizes of particles. And the next step is to connect this, or given this random Laguerre tessellation, we model a random connectivity graph, which you will see in a minute, which is the function of this random connectivity graph. And then in a third step, we use the single particle model I explained before, but a conditional version of it. So given the tessellation and given the graph, we draw realizations from this multivariate normal distribution describing these coefficients lowercase a under certain condition. But because of the normality of this random vector of serial harmonics coefficients, also this conditional distribution is normal again, and it's easy to simulate it. So things still are rather fast, and you can do huge. Over the weekend you can compute a large number of different scenarios and can do virtual scenario analysis. And on Monday then you have the results for a large number of various kinds of network constellations. Okay, morphological smoothing is maybe not so important. So I repeat this image, which I showed you already before. Step first is to draw the realization of the tessellation, then the next step to draw realization of the connectivity graph, and given this, we draw a conditional for each cell we draw a conditional conditioning on a certain event, which I explain in a minute. We draw realizations from this multivariate normal distributions of spherical harmonics components coefficients. And of course the tessellation, and in our case at least, you might not it's not necessary of course to remove the tessellation, but and the connectivity graph, but in the materials structure, microstructure case, the tessellation and the connectivity graph are auxiliary modeling tools which are removed, and some smoothing.
You have this connectivity graph, so it is a function of the geometry, or is it something that you add to the random structure?
I will explain details. Now, this was the repetition of the summary, and now the details. So in our case, we generated the Laguerre tessellation by a specific choice of random market point process. So the locations of the macro base stations and some weights of some capacity issue or whatever are described by the random radii RI. Are modeled by a random sequential absorption process. So in other words, we sequentially throw at random spheres into our sampling window, and we reject those spheres which cause a collision. And we do this so long until we fill a certain volume fraction or area fraction. This kind of procedure has an advantage because, by definition, these spheres do not overlap. And this is an advantage because, maybe you remember, yesterday I mentioned that the Laguerre cells, or the cells produced by Laguerre germs or seed points, can have some strange behavior that the seed point cannot belong. It can happen that it doesn't belong to the cell it produces, or even there can be seed points which do not produce any cells. So if we have such a seed point process where the circles do not overlap, then these effects do not happen. In this case, each seed point creates a cell, and in each case the seed point belongs to the Laguerre cell. On the other hand, this kind of modeling has also a disadvantage because this kind of point process is not stationary. Now we have boundary effects because we do not throw. Of course, we can do this. We can do some edge corrections, very kinds of edge corrections. For example, we can do plus sampling, so we can have two sampling windows, one which is much larger than the smaller one where we do our analysis, and if we increase the outer window more and more, then what we observe in the inner window is more and more stationary. So this is, I'm not really sure, maybe Christian knows whether there are some papers or somebody else knows theoretical results about this asymptotic behavior of this random sequel absorption construction. But I'm quite sure that for example, if the radius distribution, if the radii are chosen in an IID way, and if the radius distribution is bounded, then one can formally prove that this converges to a stationary regime if we sample in larger and larger areas and analyze, and the analysis area increases not too fast, roughly speaking. Okay, so this is the seed point model, and having this, we can draw the Laguerre cells as they are defined, and the special case is the Voronoi diagram, of course, if all R's are equal. There's no need to to choose them deterministically, but we have to sample them once if you want to have a Voronoi diagram. Okay, so this is the model for the locations and the sizes of cells. And now, we don't need the seed points anymore. We just focus on the Laguerre tessellation. And maybe you see that, you believe that Laguerre tessellation produces more, a higher variability of the sizes and also of the shapes of the Laguerre cells than the Voronoi tessellation does. As you see this, you have some giant cells and also, the seed points are something like a homogeneous Poisson process. Not really, but similar. Okay, so this is the Laguerre tessellation. Now, connectivity. Given the Laguerre tessellation, we model a graph. The role of this graph is to mark edges of the Laguerre cells by connecting seed points of neighboring cells or not connecting seed points of neighboring cells. And the idea is that in each case where we connect the seed points of two neighboring cells, we have no handover problems. This edge or this part of the boundary of our radio cell has good properties, so to say. So this is the philosophy. And where we don't have such a blue edge of our connectivity graph, it can happen, not necessarily, but it can happen that the coverage area doesn't reach the boundary of the Laguerre cell and we can have problems. So this is the philosophy. And how this idea is realized? So in two steps, or in three steps even, we look at the configuration of seed points and radii and draw the following graph. We consider, as the vertex set, we consider the set of all seed points. And in the first step, we put edges between any pairs of neighboring seed points. This is too much. And for reducing edges, so we eliminate later on in next steps some of these edges. And the first step in this elimination is that we weight the edges by this quantity, where in the three-dimensional case, capital A is the surface area of the face separating the two cells corresponding to I and J. In our case, in two-dimensional case, it would be the length of the corresponding segment. And this means that large surface areas get small weights. And these small weights cause that the edge, this edge has a good chance to survive. So, and this is realized in that way that we draw the minimum spanning tree with respect to this kind of weighting. So we prefer to leave, not to delete edges with small weights. And it means edges where the length of the corresponding segment dividing the two neighboring Laguerre cells is large. Yeah? Okay, but this is again too much deletion. So we start from this minimum spanning tree and add again further edges. And in the end, we arrive between an edge set which is between this complete edge set and this minimum edge set, so to say. And the addition again of edges is done in the following way. So we look at pairs of seed points which are not yet connected by the minimum spanning tree, and we decide in a Bernoulli way whether we will connect them or not. And the decision probability or the connection probability is computed in a way which I will not explain here in details by estimating this conditional probability from data. Or you can take any L function you like. Yeah? Okay, and then the connectivity graph is this object. So the set of seed points as vertices and these two families of edges. Okay, and this is the illustration of the result. Good. The next step is to fill in the Laguerre cells with inner life, technically speaking, we draw particles from these spherical harmonics coefficients from a conditional normal distribution, and the condition is such that if we look at this, if we want to fill this cell, then the condition is that our particle hits this boundary of the Laguerre cell and this boundary, by definition. This is the condition. Whether it hits these or these, this is not clear. It can happen that the realization is such that also this boundary is hit. But by definition, those boundaries which are connected by blue segments, by the connectivity graph, must be. So we have some passages from radio cell to radio cell, so to say, which are not problematic. Okay, and how this is done? Remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another question. So, what is the rationale for having this more connectivity between cells which share a long segment? In terms of either the physical model or the one coming from material science or the one coming from communication?
No. Okay, we looked here at battery data and the model is mainly data driven, so we just observed this effect in our data. So it's rather unlikely that two particles hit just in a single point. If they hit, suppose that in the powder they are spheres, and during the sintering process they are heated and become soft, and then if they get into contact, then there is not a point contact, but they are compressed somehow and flattened, would say, and but. In reality, we just looked at data, so this is not a physical based microstructure modeling, but it's mainly data driven. Yeah? And which has disadvantages. Of course, some physicists say, okay, what is the physics behind this? But the advantage is that this kind, if you forget the physics, roughly speaking, you earn acceleration. Yeah? So you can do things much faster if you are not so formal with physics. So, for example, if you leave the grid, so most of the physical simulation algorithms like simulated annealing are grid-based. You swap between millions of voxels, and this is very, very, very slow. But having a off-grid representation and so manipulating Euclidean data, so to say, it's much faster. Yeah? And this is the advantage. This talk is just, on the one hand, an advertisement of what we are doing in Ulm. On the other hand, it might be, I think there is a chance that at least some of these details might have a certain use in mobile communication network modeling, but I have no idea how one should choose this L function in your case. Yeah? So this might be figured out in discussions. Or no. Okay, so what we do in order to meet this requirement that the edges of the Laguerre cells, where we have blue segments of the connectivity graph, are hit by the particles. To meet this requirement, we sample from a conditional Gaussian vector of spherical harmonics components with some new parameters, and the condition is such that we meet this requirement, and this is an essential representation of this condition. So we know, given the lagartization and given the connectivity graph for a particular cell, we know the number of neighbors which should be connected, of neighboring cells, and call it K. Then if we know this K, then we have K site conditions, so to say. And we simulate our Gaussian vector of spherical harmonics components given this kind of site condition or this kind of condition. So we simulate A under the condition that this happens here. So this is the philosophy. And it's clear that this kind of conditions do not destroy normality. So we still have to do with a normal distribution which can be easily simulated. So simulation, the conditional simulation of this conditional from this conditional normal distribution is not the point. Okay, morphological smoothing. Let me forget this. Let me skip this. Maybe that is not so important for you. Okay, again, three times to engineers. I say the most important things three times. That's like in politics. So model validation. It's very important. Yeah? We want to meet some basic structural features observed in our data. And the most important features are some mean values. For example, the mean volume or the volume fraction of one of these faces. In this case, here, the solid faces. So the expected coverage probability, one could say. This is very close. Specific surface area of the particles is also very close, and some other mean value, maybe I will not go into details. And other characteristics are quite nicely mimicked, like the spherical contact distances. So if you sit in an arbitrary point, I think here the colors are exchanged. If we look at structural characteristics of solid phase, we should sit in the solid phase and look and measure the shortest distance to the interface. And this is called spherical contact distance, and its distribution can be computed from empirical data and from simulated data. And it turns out that this is nearly perfect fit. Another characteristics which might be interesting. Of course, this spherical contact distribution can be also computed for the uncovered part of your cells, and then this might be even more important for you. How long you stay in the uncovered part, how diffuse this uncovered part. So volume fraction or area fraction is one thing, but is it compact? Then you have rather a small number of such islands which are not covered, but they are huge, which might be worse than to have many small islands, which you can leave rather soon until before you get lose your patience. And a similar characteristic is the chord length. Visualized in this way through a given phase. And also here we have a very good fit in different directions. Connectivity is also met very nicely. So what you can do is you sit in your radio cell and look around and count the number of neighboring radio cells where you don't have handover or handoff problems. And this is the number of blue edges outgoing from a given seed point. And engineers call this coordination number. And you see also these two distributions fit quite nicely. Okay, tortuosity is roughly speaking the degree of windedness of your communication paths. Yeah, this engineers call this tortuosity. I don't know how important tortuosity is in your case of communication paths of paths generated when hopping from radio cell to radio cell, going from A to B. But in charge transport, in the case when you look at electron transport in the solide phase, for example, there tortuosity is very important because it is a huge bottleneck for charge transport if you have regionally or locally move against an external electric field, and then everything breaks down and the throughput is close to zero. So in charge transport, this kind of image or structural characteristic is also important, and it fits nicely. Okay, all these things were the characteristic of the solid phase, of the covered area, And remember, we modeled the covered area, no? The particles, and we didn't model the complementary set. The complementary set is modeled indirectly. And this is also seen in, okay, pore phase, this is a pore phase characteristic. This still looks nice, but here, for example, if you look at the pore size distribution this is like a spherical contact distribution, but now with respect to the pore phase, here we have a disagreement, a quite dramatic disagreement, and this is caused by the fact that we do not directly model the pore phase. So we do not model the uncovered part, and there the fit is worse. Now, so we in the simulation, in the simulated structures, we have too many large holes, so to say, which is worse in your case. This is wrong in your case. Yeah? Yeah, so this might be an important discrepancy, and if you would like to try to use this method for your purposes, so we should work on that to eliminate this defect. And several other characteristics of the pore phase can be considered. Maybe I skip this. What's the time? Okay, late in time. A quite interesting characteristic is the so-called constructivity. Okay, in your case, I would say we should look at constructivity of the solid phase, of the covered part. What does it mean? It is a quotient, a squared quotient of two radii. R max is the radius of the maximum radius of balls such that you are able to cover 50% of the phase you are interested in, say of the covered area. And R min is a similar thing, but directionally. So in case of R min, you move with the balls from the bottom to the top, roughly speaking. So this is a directional counterpart of R max. And by that, because you have here an additional constraint, it's always the case that R min is smaller than R max. And the ratio, for some reason, the squared ratio is an expression of a bottleneck effect of your structure. If beta is close to zero, you have terrible bottlenecks on the way, which is wrong, yeah? And maybe also in your case wrong. Okay, and this here the fit is not so bad because the scale on the y-axis is quite small. Okay, summarizing, we developed a stochastic 3D microstructure model. It can be easily translated into 2D, absolutely no problem. We fitted it to experimental data, and we validated our model by comparing various structural characteristics. In addition, we also validated it by looking at electrochemical characteristics, charge transport characteristics, for example, using experimental microstructures as input of numerical simulations and simulated microstructures. And I think this could also be done somehow in your case, that we have mobility on existing networks and some mobility features on simulated networks, perhaps. Okay, here also the fit, I skipped, the fit is quite nice. It is really surprising. and this is the bottleneck from the computational point of view. These electrochemical simulations are quite demanding in computer power. So this is the bottleneck. And only recently people are able to do this in 3D. So far, this kind of numerical simulations, so they solve partial differential equations on heavily complex, geometrically complex domains. And in 3D it's hopeless. You know, it lasts weeks or even on supercomputers. Okay, next step, we want to look at other materials, so at other kinds of networks. And we also want to look at dynamic extensions. So far we looked at a static model, but these materials are used, and there is a heavy structural degradation of this electrode materials. You know? So, and we perform material testing, so which I mentioned already before. So we do not really compute analytical formulas by formal proving, but by simulation. No? Anyway, arriving at simple formulas as well. And these formulas are quite precise. So if you are interested in more details, of course, please, if you like, discuss it with me. But this paper is already accepted. In meanwhile, you can find it on my personal webpage. And this one, so this is the data preprocessing step where we represent our data by spherical harmonics. And this is the modeling paper, which is also on my webpage. Please feel free to download it or to have a look at it. And this is still in the pipeline where we do this validation. This validation not only with respect to microstructure, but also with respect to electrochemistry. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
I have a question. It's actually in the materials domain. Your step where you go from the tessellation to the connectivity graph, you showed us how you do it in your modeling, and then you say you did it in three steps, choosing where you put the edges. And the last step you said you compared to materials. I don't understand how, say, in a three-dimensional material, you determine which cells are actually in good contact or not in good contact?
Oh, we can see it from data. You have a binary image, huh?
Yes, yes.
And we use.
By the way, when you say good contact, do you mean good electrical contact?
No, structural.
Structural contact.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying you have sort of sintered particles near each other, and you're asking whether or not they're really in good contact or not?
Yeah. No. So the starting point, also the raw data we get from engineers,
yeah,
or those people who do the imaging, are grayscale images without particles, nothing. Huh?
Yeah.
And the first step, well, there are several possibilities. The first step might be binarization, yeah, so by thresholding. Yeah? Then you get a binary image. Still no particles. And the next step is something like a structural segmentation. So you use several kinds of algorithms are possible. Usually people use watershed, so-called supervised watershed algorithms. Did you hear about that before? No, the idea is the following. So in 1D, you have hills and valleys. Yeah? So the valleys are your white part of your binary image, and the hills are the black part. And you fill up water here. It's drawn not so nicely. So, and you fill water simultaneously in all valleys, so you have to select some starting points, which is a tricky thing. If you select too many starting points, you get over-segmentation. And as soon as two bassins hit there you draw a bound. This is then the boundary of your Laguerre cells, which later on will be the Laguerre cells, and you can.
We can talk about this after.
Okay. Okay, it's purely structural. Huh?
I also have a material sciences question. So if I have this, in the end, I have my point process, yes, and I have...
Point process of macro base stations.
Of your...
Seed points.
Seed points, mm-hmm. You call them seed points, right? And I have now a weighted graph of connectivity depending upon the area, how well they're connected.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I get is something like a graph of a Tour Eiffel or something else. So you have sort of a three-dimensional model, or it could be two-dimensional, but in your case, mm-hmm. a three-dimensional model that you can also then use for mechanical stability.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course, yes.
So do you do that?
Yes. It is important because in the battery case, charging and discharging means inserting ions into the solid phase. And then these particles become larger and mechanical tension occurs and they can fracture.
They can fracture, break. Because I mean this is basically for any 3D printer, right?
Yeah.
Is using now a 3D printer in a manufactured centered structure part in some of their airplanes.
Exactly.
And so that's why to actually characterize that and look at the mechanical durability and whatever, this would also be a model.
Yeah, of course, it is. We use this kind of models in various kinds of applications, not only for batteries and not only for transport relay. So the intention is to derive relationships between manufacturing parameters and then structural parameters and functional parameters. And functionality can be transport or mechanics or other physical properties.
Any other questions?
I have a quick question. After looking at Gerhard's coverage map, I was wondering, our modeling using path loss and so forth that would probably give us nice continuous coverage areas a correct one. Most likely you're going to get these things that shoot out along roads and things like that. So I was wondering if in modeling the cells you can have sort of non-convex cells, probably, right?
Yeah. Convexity is not an issue.
So that's a characteristic of the coefficients then that you have to allow it to be jagged.
Yes. Just holes are forbidden. Yeah.
So it would be really interesting to take that picture that he gave.
Oh, yes, it would be very interesting. Absolutely. I would happy. And I would promise to ask one of my younger co-workers to look at your data, if there are any. If it's possible to transfer some sample data to Ulm, it would be great. Yeah. So I promise that we... have a look at it and to come up with some joint analysis or joint paper. Yeah. So even not necessarily real data. Yeah. So you can create your data as you like. Yeah. So imagine something. Yeah. But for example, if it might be that your data creator is physically based. Yeah. So you have some ideas behind how you imagine. And this might cause several problems. It might be too slow or not objective enough, or what you think out in your mind is then too complex and you don't really know what are the properties of what you thought out in your mind. And then we could try to use this kind of analysis to describe in a more compressed way the feature.
So what you really have is you have the ability to have shape.
Right, so you can take those, the red zones.
But the problem, but one basic problem that we have in real cellular networks that we have discontinuous cells, you know. we have cells that sort of sputter outside, even.
Mm-hmm.
Because
isolated cells, huh? Completely.
Yeah, because you have the base station sitting here, and then the hill goes up like that, and you have sort of the range here, and suddenly there's a little area up there that also belongs to the cell.
Okay. So the cells are not are disconnected. Yeah. Consisting of two
holes,
separate. Parts. Yeah, one has to think about that.
And that's where your functional modeling doesn't work, right?
Not yet.
No,
you need a relation.
One should think about that. But everything, nothing is excluded.
Very good. Let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you very much. Maybe.